I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Chucky Raven. Welcome, Chucky.
Thank you. Excited to talk about everything.
You're excited. I'm excited. On Tuesday night at the Government House Ballroom in Perth, a lovely place to be, you were announced as the winner of the 2025 Fogarty Literary Award.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thanks. It's still setting in.
Well, it's quite something, isn't it? I mean, a big cash award, $20,000. Your unpublished manuscripts is going to be published next year by Fremantle Press. Mm. We're sitting this morning in the Fremantle Press offices, surrounded by books, and one day next year yours is going to be sitting up here.
Yeah, I was thinking that the other day. I was looking around at all the books that I've read and the authors I've heard, and I'm like, oh, I'll be up there.
So how does it feel? What was the immediate sensation on hearing your name called out at the Government House Ballroom?
Honestly, I had to stop myself from sobbing. I'm a softie. I get emotional over family events and all this sort of thing. And it was so overwhelming that I had to actually take a second to get a few breaths in. And I listened back to the speech, and it's so funny. It's like I'm rushing through it, and most of it's me just like holding my breath, trying to get all the words out. It's just overwhelming and incredible. And like, yeah, it all hit me at once that like, four judges had read my book. Even the fact that like four people had read my book was something entirely new to me, let alone enjoyed my book enough to then give it an award. So, yeah.
Well, a lot of people are going to look forward to reading it. I mean, just reading from some of the blurb here, because the book isn't out for us all to read at the moment. It says, Chucky Raven's queer young adult novel, YA novel, Glimmers in the Sea Glass. We'll come back to the title. I love book titles and where they came from and if they last. But Glimmers in the Sea Glass takes us from the oppressive silence of small towns to the locked wards of a children's hospital, immersing us in the lives of two young protagonists separated by 20 years. The engrossing page turner pulls the reader deep into the heart-wrenching, heartwarming roller coaster lives of its characters. And in an earlier quote from you, it says they describe the novel as being about family and how we define and redefine it. They said it's about the strength of young queer people and the importance of our queer elders and our community. It's also about silence and the ways it creeps into our lives, our circles, and how we can speak it out of existence. That's the quote. And I have to say, when I read all of that, I wanted to make my first question to you. So it's about my third. this notion of silence and how we can speak it out of existence. tell me about that.
I think I'm just thinking of all the things that go, particularly in country towns, but I think everyone has experiences of these things that just aren't talked about, and they become these great monsters in the closet that we're too afraid to talk about, whether it's like gender and sexuality and stuff, or if it's, you know, family trauma or like family history you don't talk about. And once you're able to actually speak about those things, they're so much less intimidating. It's from a queer perspective, I know a lot of parents who have a little bit of worry about telling their friends that they've got young queer kids, and then they won't talk about it for a while, and then they'll mention it, it'll come out, and then their friends will go, oh yeah, well my niece is this, or my son is that, and that kind of thing. And we all realize that we all have experiences of this. We're all actually, I think a lot of people assume that other people aren't queer allies, and then when you talk about it, you realize that you are. We're all just too afraid to say it. And yeah, so that's sort of what that was about.
Well, you're right. I mean, 50 years ago, coming out was obviously a difficult thing, and I suspect 50 years ago, or when you're not 50, I don't think, but when you were younger, whether there were books for you to read that you could relate to as a younger queer person.
My experience has been, there were some that sort of tackled the topics, but a lot of the ones that I sort of connected with as a young queer person, I didn't necessarily realise that what I was connecting with was this subtext of queer characters, because a lot of the time it's not mentioned, you just kind of like hinted at in those like earlier novels, and we kind of like queer people and a lot of minoritized groups will find representation in places even where it may not have been meant to have been there. One perfect example is in a lot of like old Hollywood media, the villain was always this queer character and always very flamboyant, and that was all to do with the I think it was the Hays Code at the time, is that you couldn't have queer people be good people, but people still found representation, even though they were the villain in the story. They were like, oh, here's someone who has the same sexuality as me. And so, yeah, there weren't that many novels, but there's increasingly more. And you can see, like, you go on Netflix now and there's like more and more representation every year. And I think it's brilliant because you want, you know, queer people to see what they can be. And yeah.
Now, tell us a bit about your writing career. Where did these writing ambitions come from? When did they first, in that sense, manifest themselves? Mm. Were you one of these kids whose parents said, oh, for God's sake, don't read me another story?
Yeah, mum's such a passionate reader. She does all sorts of work with that. And she's always encouraging to me to read. And our whole family, you know, was constantly borrowing each other's books to read. And also just writing as well. I think most of my siblings do like a little bit of poetry and that sort of thing. And I was the same. I was always like sort of expressing myself that way. My sister constantly had, and she's my younger sister, she's 4 years younger than me. And she always had a Word document open with like 20,000 words of this random story she'd written. So we're all kind of encouraged to do it. But to writing novels, I haven't attempted that until the last sort of four or five years. I didn't know how to start. I didn't know where's the starting point for a novel. But then, yeah, 4 or 5 years ago, I just kind of went, I want to write this scene. And I wrote a scene, and then I thought about what happened before that and what's going to happen next. And then eventually I cobbled together probably my worst piece of writing to date, but it was a novel. And then they've gotten progressively better.
So, as I've read out, your novel's described as a queer YA novel. Did you always intend it to be? Were you going to write something more general initially and then decide, hang on, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, I think initially I had this desire to write something targeted at adults, but it's just kind of the characters' voices themselves really lent themselves to a YA fiction. And the way I was telling the story and the kind of like the young wisdom that I was using, it really made sense for it to be a young adult novel. But I think at the same time, it's something that a lot of adults can still enjoy and connect to, because it speaks to that, like, that experience of like feeling like you're not young enough to have a choice in your life, but feeling too old to be told what to do. And, you know, I think we can all still relate to that. To some level. So yeah, and it just ended up, you know, because I work with a lot of young people, and we've got a library at the drop-in clinic where I work. A lot of that's YA, so a lot of the like voices that I'm hearing are those of like younger people. So I think it just kind of naturally unfolded like that. But we'll see if that's what I keep writing, or yeah.
Well, the beauty about literature, the beauty about novels of all sorts, a little bit like the beauty of live performance, whatever it is, you can just enjoy it. You see the human heart at work. And I imagine, without giving too much away, you can tell us a little bit about what we can expect to discover when this hits the bookstands.
Yeah, so this has been the thing I've had to learn over the last couple of days doing these interviews, is how do I talk about the book without talking about the book? But I've said before in other interviews, it follows two storylines. One is this young kid called Owen, who's growing up in Perth in 2024, and then this young kid called Cez, who's growing up in Donnybrook in the early 2000s. And the basic storyline is both of them trying to be who they are and be accepted for who they are, while navigating all of these other things that happen in life. But the key thing that it focuses on is that idea of found family and where we find ourselves when home isn't safe, and when our community doesn't reflect who we are and that sort of thing. So, the two storylines cross over in a way that I won't reveal.
Yes.
But and it's sort of got this... I've heard the term like magical realism before. It's not quite that. I think it's like, I call it spiritual realism. And it's this sort of like, both of the characters have this sort of spiritual, mystical, fantasy way of understanding their world. And like, you know, says this young character grew up in a Catholic household, and so a lot of her language is around, like, is sort of around religious terms and that sort of thing. That's how she understands it. And then Owen grew up in an atheist household that has this way of understanding mental illness, and they call this thing the chaos, which is this like force that kind of follows their dad around, and that they're worried that they've now, you know, inherited it. And yeah, so it's a very roundabout explanation, but yeah.
Well, you assume that most people learn first novels, somehow there's a fair bit of autobiography in it.
Yeah, there's, I've realized that the way that I write is I will pick a couple of things that have happened to me and put them together in a way that they didn't happen, you know? So I've like, when I was younger and I was getting bullied, I've been in a fight before. And I'll think of, what's another example? I had someone steal one of my toys when I was in primary school. Now, I've never been in a fight when someone's stolen my toys, but I can put those two things together and create a story about how I got in a fight when someone stole my toy. So I sort of do that, and it's sort of reading Glimmers in the Sea Glass is kind of like reading some parts of my childhood completely rewritten in a way that they didn't happen, but just recognizable enough to those who were there. And there's some little anecdotes in there that are kind of verbatim, but all the characters and the families in it and stuff are fictional. But yeah, I based it in Donnybrook because I have really strong memories of, I only spent the first 6 years of my life in Donnybrook, but it was really, it's just stuck with me. And it's so vivid, and I've been back there like so many times since, that it made sense to write this about a place that I know. And also, like, I've got older siblings who were a little bit younger than Cez was when we were in Donnybrook, but like hearing them talk about their experience of the country town as well. And yeah, and then obviously, you know, like all the mental health struggles and gender identity and all that, it's all things I've got lived experience of. And so, yeah, it's really helped to be able to talk about it. It's actually been kind of therapeutic to write the novel itself.
Well, I was going to ask you that, whether it has been therapeutic. Have you dealt with issues in a way that you didn't expect to?
Yeah, I think it's going to get a little too deep, but like, I think often our stories are told for us, so we feel like we're not in control of the narrative, and to actually rewrite things that have happened and to like change the ending is, I think, really, really powerful. Mm. And it's made me, the whole novel isn't about stuff I went through, but it still helped me realize that I can shape my life to be what I want it to be. And it's helped me to like understand things in a different light, writing about characters who are very similar to people that I've encountered, and having it be a way of coming to understand those people in a way I haven't understood them before. Yeah.
So when you stand back and look at it, mm. and the book proverbially comes out on the shelf, who are you hoping will buy it? Who would you like to have reading it?
I was thinking about this because when I first started writing it, I thought I wanted it to be to just write a book for young queer kids, and I think it's really important that this book does appeal to young queer kids, and I want them to see themselves reflected in it, but I also want allies of the LGBT community and people who don't have as deep an understanding, or, you know, don't know that they know any queer people, I want them to be able to read it and get a bit of an insight into it. It's that idea of windows and mirrors. I want people to be able to look in and see what this world is like, and I also want people to see themselves reflected. So yeah, young adults, new adults, adults. I think it's a really, I hope it's a valuable story, and I hope it's one that people get something out of, regardless of how they identify. There's so many things in there that I think many people in country towns can relate to, regardless of gender identity and sexuality and that sort of thing, because growing up in a country town, you know what you can, you know, it's quite easy to be on the brink of society, or to be pushed out, judged, you know. It's makes it a lot harder to be who you are when it's a small community, so I think lots of people can relate to it.
It's an interesting point that you make. I've lived in a lot of small country towns until I came to the city when I was about 15. Mm. And I guess that's it. There's places that people who, for whatever reasons, want to get away from others in the city, it's possible, but less so in a country town. I suppose it really does create a microcosm for a novel.
Mm. Yeah, and it's sort of, It was a little bit of a shortcut, to be honest, in creating the narrative itself, because there are these stereotypes in country towns that you can sort of borrow from and reform and rewrite in different ways. You know, a lot of like West Australian novels are country town based, and like a lot of our indie films are all, you know, in small country towns. So we all get what a country town is meant to look like in a novel. But then the challenge was then trying to do it in a fresh way, in a way that's not too stereotypical and isn't just pigeonholing people who live in country towns. So
now I'm guessing wearing this fantastic Fogarty is sort of going to change your life. Has it sort of occurred to you?
Yeah, I still can't even process what it means for the future. I spent the last month convincing myself I wasn't going to win, because I'm terrible for getting my hopes up. I do it way too much, and then I end up like, oh, bugger. And I was just like, I got to the point, I'm like, I am just happy to have been shortlisted. I think this is fantastic. And like that alone is going to do wonders for the shortlisted authors. I'll say, like, Seth Malakari, Jess Baker, and Serena Moss, the other shortlisters, like, you're going to hear from them in the future, because the prestige of being shortlisted for the Fogarty is incredible. But yeah, to win it, it's just, I feel like I've been skyrocketed, and like I've collected $200 and I've passed go, and I'm onto the world of publishing. Yeah, people are already asking about like, what are you writing next? And like, when, you know, when are we going to
see? Oh, you've stolen my next question.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just that being published itself is going to change everything for me with my writing career. Having $20,000 that I can use to then take time off for work to focus on my career, or I can use it to invest in things that I really value, like giving back to the queer community, this sort of thing, is just exceptional. Yeah.
Well, you're also going to have a sort of broad public profile around the country.
Yeah, a little nervous about that one. I'm a pretty private person. I'm not used to being known, I guess. And so I'm still getting used to that. But I think I said this to, I was talking to my grandmother the other day. She was there at the awards ceremony. And I was saying, like, I've spent the last 10 years learning how to be me. And I'm not about to change that just so I can sell more novels. So I'm just going to go about it how I would go about it, and share what I want to share and not share what I don't want to share.
Before you wrote this manuscript, what sort of stuff were you writing? Were you writing poetry? Were you doing the 20,000-word document that your sister was drafting? How did you develop your writing?
From the time I was about 18 to maybe 24, 25, I was part of this group called Spoken Word Perth, and we were doing slam poetry, which was a big thing back then and is still quite a big thing, particularly over in the US. It's a spoken word poem, and usually there's like a kind of a beat to it, but it's not like this. It's not the beatnik poetry, it's a different kind. But that's a lot of those poems were kind of narrative poems about things I'd experienced and that sort of thing. So that's where I think that's where a lot of my style comes from. It's not poetry, but it's all very musical and poetic. But the first novel I wrote was actually this like kind of therapeutic, almost autobiographical novel of the last couple of years, of having started to find myself and had this like revelation about my sexuality and gender, and like grappling with that. So that was, and I read that now and I go, yeah, that really is me processing who I am and finding myself. And then the next novel I wrote was called Lioness, and it's a story of this young trans girl who goes on a tall ship called the Lioness, which is based in Fremantle, and anyone who I think it's Dutch, speaks Dutch, will know that the Leeuwen is Dutch for lioness. And that was a story about this trans girl finding her place in the wider community and finding acceptance in that. And I look at that and I go, oh, well, that was me trying to, you know, again, processing it. So I feel like, a lot of the writing I've done has just been me processing who I am. And then I happen to create something from it that hopefully other people can connect to.
In terms of shout-outs, you've mentioned your grandmother, your family, at that very personal level. Mm. What about in the literary world? Do you owe it to the beat poets?
Yeah. I think there's such a strong community of writers in WA, and I wasn't even aware of it when I was younger. But like, it was so easy to find a writer to talk to. I mean, like, I'm lucky enough that, like, my auntie Sally Murphy is an author with Fremantle Press, and so I like grew up around authors, but like we always had authors coming to school to talk about their books, and we always had like guest spots teaching us how to write and that sort of thing. And yeah, I've found that so many West Australians are really keen for arts to be a strong thing in Western Australia. We've got an awesome music scene, we've got an awesome writer scene, and we're getting a really good television and film industry. And so without all of that, none of this, like it would have been a lot harder to get where I am right now. This whole thing, the whole having a novel finished and submitted, I owe to so many people, but to Georgia Richter and Kate Sutherland. I submitted that very first novel that I wrote to Georgia, and like she took the time to meet with me and sit down, talk about my writing, and was like brutally honest in the most helpful way about that manuscript and what should change. And then she listened to my next story, and you know, she said like, well, I think that first novel you wrote, you should leave that for now, focus on this next one, submitted that, and then Kate Sutherland gave me feedback on that. So they've just been so supportive in helping me improve my writing. And then having Andrea Thompson, another author with Frio Press, like read some of my earlier work as well and gave me feedback. And yeah, like I look back through the history of me writing, and there's so many people that just kind of gave me a leg up and helped me with it. Like my English teacher, Mrs. Barrett, just made me fall in love with media and English and that sort of thing.
Isn't that lovely, that teacher story? Because teachers are so important in this process too, aren't they? And the notion that Western Australia, Fremantle, Perth, Donnybrook, is in this remote part of the universe. Yeah. If it's true, it's only because it takes you longer to fly somewhere, but it really incubates all of these talents, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we all bounce off each other and we're all aware of each other. So yeah, it all feeds into itself, really. I think there's this like pride in being from WA, and there's a huge pride of being from country WA for a lot of authors, because it's that thing of like, yeah, maybe we're in the middle of nowhere, but like we're here and we've made it. And yeah.
The word pride also reminds me, you've been involved in Perth Pride Shed.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, so long story short, we're taking the model of the men's shed and we're going to translate it to suit the LGBTQIA+ community and allies. Because what we found is there's a lot of both young queer people and older LGBT people who are like, they want more connection with each other. We've got young queer people who don't have connection to their elders, and elders who don't have connection to young people. And without that, I think the community can't fully be a full community. So we want to make an intergenerational space where it's knowledge sharing and like teaching people skills, and also just having a connection to community. So we're in the process of incorporating now, and we've had awesome support. We've got WAC, which is a queer organisation in Perth, Living Proud, Pride WA, Rainbow Futures and Grey all jump on board to support us. And now we're looking for the founding sponsors to kind of get things rolling. We've essentially been told from a couple of different funding bodies that once we get an initial bit of funding, they're all going to be happy to jump on board. So, yeah, and it's that idea of an intergenerational space. I mean, you can't, I've said this too many times now, but cultural knowledge is passed on from grandparents to parents to kids, but queer cultural knowledge is only passed on if you are connected to your elders, and I think a lot of us aren't at the moment, and I think it would just be magnificent to see that remedied. Yeah,
and I'm sure it'll also be passed on, like a lot of cultural knowledge, through literature.
Yeah. I'm sure at some point I'm going to write a thinly veiled metaphor for the Pride Shed at some point. Yeah.
So the next novel, what can you give away?
What do I want to give away? I've started it because I wanted to process things. How do I phrase this? I want to rewrite the story of myself and my dad. And so this next novel is going to be a hypothetical dialogue between this young queer person and this absent father. And yeah, so it's an interesting, it's interesting because right now it's very much a story about it's me writing what I would like to say. But when it is initially, when it's eventually realized, I'm sure it'll be quite different and fictionalized and it'll become its own entity. So yeah.
It might be a television series or a movie in it, Chucky.
Oh, see, I would lose my mind if that happened.
Well, I have no doubt that your life is changed. This validation, I suppose, at the end of the day, of a ambition to be a writer, it must make it feel good, but knowing there's a lot of work ahead.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm really keen to get into it. I want to get through, I'm going to get into the editing section of it and really go through it all.
As I said at the outset, I'm always interested in titles to books. Glimmers in the Sea Glass. I guess we won't really know what the poetry in that is until we read the book. But where did it come from?
I was writing a scene in one of the storylines, Owen's storyline. And Owen, this young non-binary kid, has this like strong connection to the ocean. And likes walking along and collecting sea glass and seashells and this kind of thing. Has when they were younger, they had this sort of fantasy world they lived in with their boyfriend, where they imagine this whole fantasy world that takes place in this place called Coverley Island, which is this little limestone outcrop that's actually connected to the land, and they find sea glass and stuff in there. So I was writing a scene about this, and then it just like popped into my head, glimmers in the sea glass, and I think it's beautiful. It's like looking for the beauty within the beauty, and I think sea glass is. I think sea glass is magic. Like, I think it's a bottle or a cup or something that's been broken and tossed on the sand for God knows how long. And then it comes out and it's like a frosted gem. And I think just like as a kid, as an adult, as an older person, I get so excited when I see it.
Chucky, I think this is going to be a gem. Look forward to reading it. And thank you for meeting me today. And congratulations again on being the 2025 Fogarty Literary Award winner.
It's been great. Thank you.